Deuteronomy 19. When the Lord your God has destroyed the nations whose land he has given you, and when you have driven them out and settled in their towns and houses, then set aside for yourselves three cities centrally located in the land the Lord your God has given you to possess. Build roads to them and divide into three parts the land the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance, so that anyone who kills a man may flee there. This is the rule concerning the man who kills another and flees there to save his life. One who kills his neighbor unintentionally, without malice aforethought. For instance, a man may go into the forest with his neighbor to cut wood, and as he swings his axe to fell a tree, the head may fly off in his neighbor and kill him. That man may flee to one of these cities to save his life. Otherwise, the avenger of blood might pursue him in a rage, overtake him if the distance is too great, and kill him, even though he is not deserving of death, since he did it to his neighbor without malice aforethought. This is why I command you to set aside for yourselves three cities. If the Lord your God enlarges your territory as he promised on oath to your forefathers and gives you the whole land he promised them, because you carefully follow all these laws I command you today, to love the Lord your God and to walk always in his ways, then you are to set aside three more cities. Do this so that innocent blood will not be shed in your land, which the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance, and so that you will not be guilty of bloodshed. But if a man hates his neighbor and lies in wait for him, assaults and kills him, and then flees to one of these cities, the elders of his town shall send for him, bring him back to the city, and hand him over to the avenger of blood to die. Show him no pity. You must purge from Israel the guilt of shedding innocent blood, so that it may go well with you. Do not move your neighbor's boundary stone set up by your predecessors in the inheritance you receive in the land the Lord your God has given you to possess. One witness is enough to convict a man accused of any crime or offense he may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If a malicious witness takes the stand to accuse a man of his crime, the two men involved in the dispute must stand in the presence of the Lord before the priests and the judges who are in office at the time. The judges must make a thorough investigation, and if the witness proves to be a liar, giving false testimony against his brother, then do to him as he intended to do to his brother. You must purge the evil from among you. The rest of the people will hear of this and be afraid, and never again will such an evil thing be done among you. Show no pity, life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Chapter 20. When you go to war against the enemies and see horses and chariots and an army greater than yours, do not be afraid of them, because the Lord your God, who brought you up from Egypt, will be with you. When you are about to go into battle, the priest shall come forward and address the army. He shall say, "Hear, O Israel, today you are going into battle against your enemies. Do not be faint-hearted or afraid. Do not be terrified or give way to panic before them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to give you victory." The officers shall say to the army, "Has anyone built a new house and not dedicated it? Let him go home, or he may die in battle and someone else may dedicate it. Has anyone planted a vineyard and not yet begun to enjoy it? Let him go home, or he may die in battle and someone else enjoy it. Has anyone become pledged to a woman and not married her? Let him go home, or he may die in battle and someone else marry her." Then the officers shall add, "Is any man afraid or faint-hearted? Let him go home, so that his brothers will not be become disheartened too." When the officers have finished speaking to the army, they shall appoint commanders over it. When you march up to attack a city, make his people an offer of peace. If they accept and open their gates, all the people in it shall be subject to forced labor and shall work for you. If they refuse to make peace and they engage you in battle, lay siege to that city. When the Lord your God delivers it into your hand, put to the sword all the women in it. As for the women, the children, the livestock, and everything else in the city, you may take these as plunder for yourselves, and you may use the plunder the Lord your God gives you from your enemies. This is how you are to treat all the cities that are at a distance from you and do not belong to the nations nearby. However, in the cities of the nations the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance, do not leave alive anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, all the Lord your God has commanded you. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things they do in worshiping their gods, and you will sin against the Lord your God. When you lay siege to a city for a long time, fighting against it to capture it, do not destroy its trees by putting an axe to them, because you can eat their fruit. Do not cut them down. Are the trees of the field people that you should besiege them? However, you may cut down trees that you know are not fruit trees and use them to build siege works until the city at war with you falls.
So what have we learned? Let's start chapter 19 first. We learn chapter 19.
What punishment is different for premeditated murder and murder or killing someone without
intent to do so?
In fact, I think in our law today, they still use the word without malice aforethought.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's how serious the Torah is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Malice and forethought, yes.
Yeah, I put in my thing kind of, basically the difference between, murder or homicide, and we also have different categories of, manslaughter, like negligent homicide or manslaughter, vehicular manslaughter,
yeah.
This kind of thing, that where you don't have the pre-planned intent to kill someone. But yet, by your action, someone did die. There has to be a consequence.
There had to be consequences. The Bible backs that up, too.
Yeah. So, and we have different categories for those consequences.
Yep. Like, if you're a drunk driver 3 times and you kill somebody, you may have life in prison. Because you're still, though it didn't mean to kill the person, you still are neglecting your conduct.
Right.
Yeah, but this is interesting because it addresses questions like that young boy who was driving and hit the car and killed the family that was inside, the mother and the father and the little children. But he's facing quite a long time in jail. But it doesn't seem, there was no intent. It could happen to anybody.
Yeah, I know. The only thing I don't know about the case is actually what was brought out in the court. We don't know whether it was his carelessness, recklessness, he wasn't paying attention. We have no knowledge about that.
Yeah, he said he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, that's a serious matter if you don't pay attention. Yeah. A vehicle is a very deadly thing.
It's a deadly weapon.
So you need to make sure. That's why we have laws that are stronger now that at a certain age you must have an adult with you.
Yeah.
To the age of 18 or something like that.
I remember what's. Person to be facing that many years in prison when he's not a bad kid.
Not a bad kid.
He did set out to do it. I could see where this might apply a bit more mercy to the situation than the American judicial system, perhaps.
Yeah, in certain cases. Probably true. I have no... Jeff?
Yeah, it's just that when we talk about negligence, like there's that case earlier in the Torah where it talks about, if you have... it uses the example of an ox, and you know that it's known to get out and gore people and run amok, and you don't keep tabs on it, you don't control it, you don't corral it, you are negligent, then you can be liable for any deaths that ox causes.
Yeah. Yeah, without knowing what the court was and what the case against him was, it's really kind of hard to make a ruling and saying that it was unfair or fair without having to find out. How many times has he been careless before in driving? We don't know about, and he's been disciplined or been warned or given a ticket or whatever. We don't know those things.
Because in the example of the ox, it's one of those things like it says that if the ox had never gotten out before and it certainly busts out and then kills somebody, well,
then you're not liable.
You're not liable for that. However, if it's known to do so and you're careless about it, then it's on your head.
The other thing that was very interesting was the witnesses, where if there's one witness, if there's a dispute and they go before God and one is a witness, a dishonest witness, they stone him.
Or it's eye for eye, foot for foot, whatever he has intended, what he meant to harm the individual with.
Yeah.
That's what will be paid, okay? Even from life to life, or even as from foot to foot or eye for eye. If he wanted to poke the guy's eye out, then he gets his eye poked out. And there's a literal sense, but we understand that. You have a statement?
Well, it's going along with the eye for eye, tooth for tooth thing. If that is upheld righteously, and let's say somebody's eye does get poked out or tooth broken off or hand or foot cut off in a fight type of thing, and, you know, it's a fight between two people, and it happens, and it was out of anger and hatred. The person that did it is going to be, if that's carried out, and they get their eye poked out or their tooth knocked out or whatever the case may be, when that's done and carried out, that brings fear to people to think twice about doing anything evil towards somebody, and that's what keeps people righteous.
Yeah,
when you have pity on people and you don't carry out Torah, you don't carry out the law, which has been established, and they get away with it, then there's no fear of God. There's no fear of,
God.
Consequences. And so you have lawlessness. And that's what we have today. Because people have taken pity on those who have done wrong, and they don't suffer consequences because they have pity's been taken upon them.
Yeah.
Well, there was,
that's where justice has been.
That never happened in Israel. It was always understood.
Right, we understand that one.
It is in Islam.
I want to say a statement. Many years ago, I heard this one minister who, there was a couple of really husky guys, decided to kick an old lady. Oh. And just keep kicking her and keep kicking her, just for the fun of it. And he says, well, you know how you make them pay it back? Get a bunch of football players and have that as some boots. And let them do some kicking. He'll stop kicking the old ladies. That was an interesting statement, but you know, I understand what you're saying. If they carried out the literal portion of it, it's a serious matter, you know. Yes, I do understand the Jewish monetary concept. I understand that point.
Never practiced in theory, but it was monetary value compensation.
Plus the whole thing of proving malice aforethought, even in today's jurisprudence, proving malice aforethought is extremely difficult to do.
Well, what I'm saying, this law about the life for life, eye for eye, and tooth, that's when someone is testifying deliberately against somebody else.
Yeah.
It's not like an ordinary accident.
Yes.
Or if you got mad and you got, you know, whole law and hit somebody and they lost their tooth.
Yeah.
That's not what it's talking about. We're talking about if you had, it's what the statement said before, right? If you have this to come before and you are found to be the one that's lying to get your, hurt your friend, your neighbor, whatever that charge was, whatever that cost was, you had intended, it should be carried out. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. We need to remember that this is the context of a false witness. This isn't, because like we read earlier in Torah, there were most of the things that happened, there were monetary punishments.
Correct. Always.
So, the vast majority of things that they talk about in Torah, like, you know, certain kinds of thefts or this kind of thing, were punished by compensation through monetary means, or like if you stole their ox, you had to give them two ox.
Correct.
It was through this kind of means, not through, you know, physical violence against a person with whippings and stonings and, you know, beatings and spankings and this kind of thing that we think of sometimes.
Now remember, they had to go before the priest and the judge. So the priest and judge had to hear the whole case. And, you know, you're going before a priest or judge. Now, what happens if the priest or the judge cannot determine whether or not who's lying? Guess what? Nothing happens. Because you don't know.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's a real truth, okay? If you can't nail it down, you can't answer it, don't make a judgment.
Especially a permanent one like taking someone's life.
Right. Or, yeah, that's correct. Remember, we're still talking about one who wants to do harm against somebody, not just a casual or even a I'm mad at you, I'm going to hit you in the face or whatever. Yeah, you had a
question is, you know, you hear every now and then the guy gets off.
Oh,
and
here?
And some, you know.
Technicality.
Right, right. And obviously he murdered that person, daughter of someone. And then the mother comes and shoots the guy. You know, he's been exonerated, whatever, you know, and somehow she gets right there. And she,
that's the Avenger of the Blood.
Right,
that's what
right
that's called,
well,
biblically.
She's the Avenger of Blood. Now, that's what they'll say. Well, God told me to do it because it's in the scriptures already.
You should have obeyed the law of this land because this country had yet not been established here yet
in Israel. They still get off. I mean, even the woman, you know, the jury that's going to try her, they may right find that she.
Well, before we get farther, one thing I want to just have to.
Well, the one thing that. In answer to what she's saying, we just had read that just a little bit earlier in that, I think it was the previous chapter,
18?
Yeah, chapter 17, when it says that, you know, like in chapter 17, verse 12, you know, if you show contempt for the judge or the priest,
yeah,
basically once the judge makes a judgment, you know, you have to respect that. You can't just say, oh, well, I don't agree with it, and go off and whack the guy, you know.
We call that a contempt of court today.
Yeah, well, you can't take private
really
sentence.
But there was
God has delegated vengeance to the judge. Okay,
yeah.
The judge has got to determine the vengeance. If
yep
the judge exonerates the person, you know, you have to respect that.
Yes, respect it.
No, there was another passage, though, just... If you can find it, and I'm just.
Go ahead.
It is actually in. I don't have my Bible, so I can't point it out.
Oh.
But where it said, you know, the man flees to the city of refuge, and then.
Yeah.
But he was guilty of that malice of forethought. Then you could drag him back to the town.
That's what this is here. This is 19th chapter.
The next one.
Oh, ninth or the next chapter.
Okay.
19th chapter. Okay, Daniel, I'll get to you, and then I'm going to make my comment.
Oh. The concept of the whole. You know, do unto that person what this other individual had intended is as much as a limiter as it is a sentence.
Correct.
So, for example, you cannot do more. You're not allowed. You're limited. Which is revolutionary at this time. I imagine if I'm a laborer and I am swinging an axe and my axe hits my foreman and he loses his eye. Well, normally I'm a dead man, so it's probably half my family.
Yes.
Well, it's a limited. They cannot do more to me than what I have done to the person. And we break that rule in the U.S. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We do that in a financial sense.
Mm-hmm.
If a financial person, and they steal from their customers, we put them in prison frequently for the rest of their lives, or at least the next 20 years. Well, yeah, but he didn't actually hurt anyone physically. And putting it, they didn't take 20 years from somebody else's life. Now,
yeah.
I know you're in finances, so I'm not trying to point anything out, but the way that in our own country, we don't use limiters as the Bible has stated. This is equal as a limiter as it is a free
rule. That is correct. That is correct. Okay, one thing I wanted to bring out, the first thing was stated in this chapter was what?
The Lord your God cuts off the nation whose land the Lord your God gives you, and you dispossess them, and you settle in their cities and in their homes.
Then set aside the cities.
For yourself.
Then what?
Then you can
set aside the...
Verse 2. You shall separate three cities for yourself. First priority. Before any judgment comes down. Before any accusation comes down, before anything happens, first things first with God. Get that city of refuge. And you must make that highway to that refuge off limits. You cannot attack someone who is heading toward one of these cities. Is that the road included is part of that access. You cannot charge, you cannot charge, you can't go after him if he's on that road. Heading toward the city. All right? That's the first thing God thinks about. Not the last thing. I'm going to judge him. I'm going to condemn him. I'm going to protect him first. Protection comes from God first. And he says, I want to build three cities for that purpose. And the road must be as, quote, holy, if I use that terminology, or sacred as the city of refuge. Alright, so the whole thing must be heard. God does not like vigilantes. There is nothing in the Bible that says, but vigilantes are there. They're always present. That's why he says you've got to give this person a chance to run and flee. Vigilantes, do not go after him. A blood avenger cannot go after him. The blood avenger goes after him before he gets there. He's a bad dude for the person who's healed him. Because he didn't have a just court. God believes in just. What is this Torah is? What did you say? It's justice first, mercy second, faith comes third. First thing that God wants is justice. And you can't very well, why we have cities of refuge is for justice first. All right? You understand what I'm saying? This is the whole course, why there must be three. And he said, now if I expand your country and make it bigger than it really is, as I promised to your forefathers, you will also add three more. Now we know they had three on this side, three on that side. Now they're going to have three more. Mm-hmm. The total of nine cities of refuge. Be total if it expanded out. But of course, he put a stipulation down there, verse 9. If you keep these commandments and do them, and to love the Lord your God and to walk always in his ways. So God put a stipulation up on that thing. God has justice first. He's not out there trying to get the bad guy. He's out there to get justice first. And the case must be, and you read through it, thoroughly investigated. Thoroughly, you know, the reason why we have sometimes long times in courts. Because if the evidence is not sufficient, you can't convict the person, even though it looks like it really took place. He really did it. You know, like this new modern thing of the DNA we have. They have found an awful lot of men who did not rape the woman, was sentenced to 20 years in prison. DNA came out. Finally, no, he didn't. You know, very few of those men have been able to say, that's okay. The same thing can happen with any case. A murderer, a convicted murderer, who didn't really kill anybody because of false witnesses or bad evidence, whatever the case may be, or planted evidence. Okay, that's all evil. Okay? We have that running in our country constantly. We know that. I'm not in every single case. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying that, but when we look at God, first thing he wants is, he wants justice first, the city of refuge. Get the city of refuge. Protect the person first. Then we'll have justice. Because you can't have justice if the person's not protected. All right, does that make sense? Okay. Hope you'd like that one. Of course, we already talked about the law about witnesses, right? We need to go much into that one. Is there any more questions about the witnesses? Okay, chapter 20. What did you learn from chapter 20? What did you get out of chapter 20?
Leave the fruit trees alone.
That's right.
Leave the what?
Leave the fruit trees
alone. If you're besieging the city for a long time. All right.
And they could keep the wives and the children, the women and the children in the cities that were distant, but they had to wipe them out if they were close by.
Right. There's a it means outside the boundary. The distance was outside the territory of Israel, outside the territory that was given to them. But you remember why I read this last week I did this? I think it was last week. Anyway, why these particular ones that he calls out, why he said, I want you to destroy them. Remember what it was? There were nine things which they did. Nine things listed which were evil beyond your imagination. Passing your children through fire? Wow. Pretty nasty, isn't it? He says, now why do you want them wiped out? Because they will, and they did. History is there, written in the Torah. I mean, not in the Torah. And I think it's in Kings. And in...
Samuel.
Yeah, okay, you guys, you know, they're all over the place. Anyway, and the prophet Jeremiah was very... quoting God angry about passing children through fire. So they didn't get rid of it. It's a very strong, because you're answering to not the creator of heaven and earth. You're answering to another principality. And those other principalities only do one thing.
Destroy.
Destroy. Their object is destroy.
Lie, steal, and destroy.
Right.
Okay. So now when you go out to battle your enemies, you see horses and chariots of people more numerous than you. That's quite common, right? I mean,
right.
Someone's going to go to war against you. Now, when we look back in 1967. Look at 1967, the odds were just overwhelming against Israel. I mean, just massively huge. Yeah, they had more horses, they had more chariots, they had more men, they had more ammunition, they had more... But what did God say? Don't look at that. That's the least of your concerns. The odds are not against you. Now, what's happening? We talk about the 27th of this month,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is Israel is looking at the enemy.
Yeah.
And they see the enemy huge, massive.
Mm-hmm.
Got more arms, more ammunition, more weapons, more economic, more political power, more persuasion. They got everything on their side. And what does Israel have? Even America's not really on their side in certain cases, right?
Not really.
And England's long past is it's
so
right. And so now the odds are really, really against them. Now what should they have done? Listen. Shema Yisrael, today you are on the verge of a battle with your enemies. Do not let your heart faint. And that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're seeing that in the nation of Israel today. The United States is not in that position, are they?
What about the Messianics in Israel, though? There are Messianic Jews in Israel.
In the minority.
We're talking, okay, every time the Word of God has to do, he's addressing here the leadership. Now, watch, listen to what I'm saying. He's addressing the leadership. He's not addressing the average person yet. He's addressing the leadership. If we go into this, we must see it and understand. He mentioned about going, the priest going before the army. And he said, now, they besiege you. Do not let your heart faint. Do not be afraid. Do not be troubled or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he who gives, who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies and to save you. Now, what is a general supposed to say? After the priest has said this, you hear from the word of the living God first, right? You hear what Yahweh has to say. You hear what Elohim is telling them. What does he tell them? Hey, have courage. I'm on your side. Even though the odds are 1,000 to 1, I will have 10,000 flee on your right hand, the left hand, and 10,000 fall, or 1,000 fall on your right hand. I can't remember that. It's in Proverbs somewhere. Or it's in Psalms. It's okay. He has that power to do so. But see, we don't think of God, Israel today, the nation of Israel today, as I said before, because they have acknowledged God, they don't want to acknowledge God, God gave them over to what? A reprobate mind, a mind that does not understand. If you don't understand, guess what? Terror is going to take over. Fear is going to dominate you. And that's what's happening to the nation of Israel. If Israel, this is my personal belief now, if the leadership of Israel, because this is what's going to address in here, would stand up,
yeah.
And hear what the priest has to say. Then what? They would have the courage, the strength, and the fortitude to fight against the odds that's so strongly against them.
Which priest?
This is how I am. I believe British. I know politics to me is very, very filthy. It's very, very ugly. It has no place in the world, in the kingdom of Israel. It has no place in the house of Israel. But it's there. Right now, Israel is losing politically on every stance. And right now, I think personally, our President of the United States is losing politically on every stance. Because he has refused to acknowledge. And I mentioned that last week, right? It's something really nasty when you start. No, what's a military man? What general is supposed to say? What man is there who has built a new house, has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he dies in battle, and another man dedicates it. What is he talking about?
He's wanting somebody to be wholeheartedly ready to do whatever it takes.
This is not what that says. That comes later.
More.
He said, if you have a new house, Do not go to war.
Consequences.
Why? The house has not been what?
Dedicated.
Why is it so important to dedicate your... What does it mean to dedicate your house? Who do you dedicate it to?
The Lord.
All right, how do you do that?
Bless it.
How?
Get up and bless your house.
Put mezuzahs on the doorpost. Put the Deuteronomy on the doorpost.
Leviticus tells us this. There's two types of oils that you sanctify your house with. One of those oils is cedar. You ever want cedar? Remember when Israel, if you go into Israel, when they had bought, they got these houses, they had to purify the house with cedar oil. I can't remember what the second one was. It's probably hyssop or something. I don't know what it was. But that's the dedication. You're dedicating this house. What is it? Because it's purifying the house. It's making it sanctified that the creator of heaven and earth can bless the house because it's not unclean. When you build a brand new house, it's still not dedicated because it's not been dedicated to God. And so you're dedicated to God. And he said, by the way, I'm a general. Do you have a new house? Yes. When did you build it? I got it finished last week. I don't want you to go to war. Go back there and you get your house. I don't care if you're the best man of the team, you go. Because if you don't, somebody else gets it. That's a priority with God. That's a priority with God. Not a priority with circumstances that are around there, but war. Why did God want the house so importantly that it had to be dedicated for? See, we don't think about God when we go to war. Nobody thinks about God when they go to war. Next. Also, what man is there who has planted a vineyard and has not yet eaten of it? Don't go to war. Go back home, harvest it, and enjoy it. Why? Why wine? Why grapes? Jeff.
Seems to me when they were talking about the fact about having your home dedicated, having the produce in your field dedicated, and finishing through with your marriage, these are basically reasons why you'd be out there fighting to begin with.
Exactly.
You're fighting for home. You're fighting for the things that God has given you. So if you're not you haven't dedicated your house. You're basically.
And you haven't picked the crop yet, the vineyard yet.
Yeah.
And you haven't gotten married yet. He said, now this is my mind thinking, please. It might be just on Richard Age's opinion. All right. God's thought is not what we think it is. God's thought is, I want you to take and keep and preserve and dedicate that which I have given to you. Make sure those things are in line first. First, number one is your house. Number two is going to be the grape. Number three is if you're married, go get one. If you're married, don't be told to get married. Go get married. And those things are important. God put them as priority. Now, we don't think about that during war. Because we need every available man. Well, no, God doesn't need every available man. He's going to go through a book of Joshua Judges there about where God had nailed down to hard anybody.
What was the second oil? Did you tell us the second
oil? I'm sorry, what?
Did you tell us the second oil to dedicate the house?
One was cedar. I don't remember the second one. It probably hyssop. It could be some other one. I don't know. Something Mally knows more about that than I do, I'll tell you the honest truth. I remember reading the book of Leviticus. We went through it and we talked with it, but I didn't pay attention to it that much. But the oil is used for purpose of what? Anointing. Every kind of oil that God has is meant for the purpose of anointing. What does he want to anoint it for? Sanctify it. Set aside. That's God's business, not ours. We may think it's stupid, but God has done that. I want to continue on here. Then the officer, after he said this now, he said, now this is where the last one comes in. Now, what if a man who is afraid or faint-hearted, let him go home, return to his house? What do we do in our country? Call them cowards, chickens. What do we call them? The old slang expression, yellowbacks? Don't ask me where that term came from. I don't know. But, we look down at a person who is afraid to go to war. What is here, it says. Go home. Go home. Yes, God wants courage. But sometimes that individual doesn't have enough. God does not say, stone him to death. Put him in prison for life. Put him in the barricade. Stockade. Put chains on him. He says, go where?
Go home.
Go home. Jeff.
When you look at these three things here about dedicating your home to God, harvesting your crop, marrying your fiance, reminds me of something that I was talking with a friend of mine who's a Vietnam vet, and he was called up in the draft, went over there, didn't really know why he was there. Most of the guys he was in his unit didn't know why they were there.
That's true.
And when they got home, they were spit upon in the airport, just treated horribly. Everybody called them baby killers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
especially in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's like, this list here of what they were fighting for, they had no idea. No one told them.
No.
They were over there.
Well, that's a political thing. We had a real bad political situation.
But you see, the thing about, cowardice.
Yes.
Cowardice, if there's something really strong you're fighting for.
Right.
You'll fight for it.
You'll fight for it.
Like that.
Right.
And if you're not interested in fighting, there's other things you can do.
There's other things you can do.
Yeah. Not everybody has to be at the front line.
That's right.
Right.
I wasn't in the front line. Called darn close to it, Vietnam, but God just turned the tables on me and I didn't have to go. I was really kind of grateful on it. I was stationed in Berlin. And our particular MOS was a very, very effective one. It would destroy the missiles before they take off. But you were always in full range of being blown up yourself real quick. And so we were all ready, all geared, packed up. Then all of a sudden the president realized, uh-oh, that leaves Berlin completely vulnerable because East Germany started maneuvering militarily to take over Berlin. I think we were vulnerable, so he canceled that one. Anyway, that's a minor situation, but okay. Any more comments, questions about chapter 20? I didn't want to bring that out about chapter 20 because I think it's very, very fascinating. And seeing that Israel, if they had just done what they supposed, hero Israel, the army is too big for you, too massive, too large. Israel, no, don't get me confused. Please, I'll talk about the country, the land of Israel, which is over there in the Middle East. This is the Israel I'm talking about right now. I'm not talking about somebody who may be a descendant of Israel, doesn't live there. We're talking about the country. If they could do this, if they would do this, something would change. Yes?
I just wanted, there's a note here, which I think is quite interesting, because if a man has not enjoyed a vineyard, right?
Right.
That's a line quite a long period of time because it's got this note says, the word to enjoy is, the verb is to desacralize. So the law behind that usage is as follows. During the first 3 years after planting a vineyard, its use was forbidden, presumably because the vines were immature. In the fourth year, the product of the vineyard was considered holy to the Lord, and in the fifth year, its sacral status was voided, and its fruits could then be enjoyed without hindrance. So God was letting the guy go off up to 5 years.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. So God doesn't need fighting men. We divided men in God.
Right.
At the first statement he said, I will do this. I will save you. I'll deliver you out of it. So it has to do with the last thing Jesus said, faith. I want justice. I want mercy. And I want faith. You have to believe God. And that takes a lot of... Sometimes I think it takes more guts to believe God than to believe your enemy. We have a tendency to believe our enemy first, and God maybe second. But listen to our friend second, perhaps, or our ally, before we listen to God. And the first thing it said, Shema Israel, hear when you go into battle the word of the Lord. Hear God first before you do anything. All right. Yes.
I think at the end of chapter 20, it says something about offering peace to a city you will be attacking and see if they will be.
That has to do with a city that they are to go to. And if they want to make peace, okay, good. We'll make peace with you. Now, at this particular point in time, you must pay tribute to us. You're under their, they are now under the rulership and authority of Israel. If the city refuses to do so, that means they refuse to be under the authority. Now, why is it so important to be under the authority of Israel?
God's chosen. God's people.
God's what?
God's chosen people.
That's right. These are the people that serve the eternal creator of heaven and earth. That's the goal of Israel, right? Remember, the name of Israel is a holy name.
Right.
Jacob is just a name. Israel was a name when he was, quote, converted. Yes. Do you understand what I'm saying so far? Okay, any more questions? It's 2:20. I suppose it'll end at 2:30, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we won't get into chapter 21. Any more questions, though? Any more ideas? Any more thoughts? Hope we learned things.
I think we have to be careful about extrapolating this too much into our own current situation, because one reason is that our own current situation, we don't have a draft. The army in the modern United States of America doesn't have a volunteer.
Oh, yeah.
Army. So,
they're brave men in the first place. How do I call it? American men are brave men and women. There's no doubt about that. That's not what I'm talking about.
Israel's military, however, is not. You have to go.
Without
you, like some rabbi's exemption, certain individual sect. But so it could apply in that case because it's actually specifically talking about Israel in that case. So, but yeah, it's hard to kind of project into other nations.
Yes. Well, I'm talking about the nation of Israel, which everybody's drafted, you know, no matter what. Yes.
Well, I mean, you tend to wonder if, as time goes on, they'll actually need the draft. Because, you know, when the nation started, they didn't need a draft. Everybody pitched in. I mean, they're down.
They did it. They went to war. They went to battle.
Yeah.
Well, like Israel. Go get your swords, Israel. Every man got his sword.
Yeah.
They didn't worry about whether or not you're in some kind of army.
If all you're fighting is for the discotheque, it might not be so appealing.
Yeah.
He's going to hop the plane to New York.